but and it's page 99 in the NRSV, so hopefully it's somewhere similar. Anyone happy to read? Great.
1 to 12. As he walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." When he had said this, he spat on the ground and made mud with his saliva and spread the mud on the man's eyes, saying to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. Then he went and washed and came back, able to see. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar began to ask, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some were saying, "It is he." And others were saying, "No, but it is someone like him." He kept saying, "I am the man." But they kept asking him, "Then how were your eyes opened?" He answered, "The man called Jesus made mud, spread it on my eyes, and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' Then I went and washed and received my sight." They said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I do not know."
Thank you. If we haven't met before, my name is Pete. I'm a first-year Trinity student just across the road. We're a dime a dozen here, I think. But before coming up to Bristol, I was a youth worker and I worked in the very humble city of Exeter. So Bristol's a big place for me. Anyone who's from Devon thinks that Exeter is a massive city. It's, you know, scary being somewhere like Bristol. I don't know about you, but... downstairs in our house, we've got like the most ridiculous system of lights. So when we moved in to the place where we are now, we're in out in Shirehampton, we had like all these really old school, like energy eating light bulbs. So first thing I did was sort of hop onto Amazon and order loads of like snazzy LED, you know, super efficient light bulbs, because I, you know, care about the environment and saving money. The problem was, when these light bulbs arrived, I hadn't really clocked the sort of equivalent wattage that they were. So they're like, I mean, I don't actually know what they are, but they're ridiculous. So when you're having dinner, it's like being in sort of like an interrogation cell, because you've just got these massive lights beaming down on you. Very uncomfortable. The problem was, I didn't actually make it in time to get them sent back. So I'm now stuck with these lights and sort of trying to make the best of it in a very British way. So I've now turned to a different system. So I've managed to create like a system of side lights around the room that, you know, now create like a very moody, you know, nice living room space. But the problem comes when I sort of have to shut up shop for the night, as it were. I go round the room, turning off all these lights one by one, until you are eventually plunged into darkness in the whole of our downstairs. Now, that probably wouldn't be too bad if you didn't have a 1-year-old daughter who leaves all of her toys all over the floor. And you could think, why don't you, you know, pack them up before you turn off all the lights? But I can just never think quite far that far ahead. So you're trying to get from, you know, the last side light to the stairs without standing on like one of these plastic landmines, and sort of getting upstairs in one piece. And again, if you were my wife, you'd have foresight, and you'd think, well, I'll turn the light on upstairs so I can get a reference point around the room and get up, you know, back upstairs safely. Again, I don't think that far ahead. So it's always quite an adventure shutting down shop. But I don't know if you can ever think of somewhere that you've been that has been like totally dark. Like really, you can't see your hand in front of your face sort of dark. A couple of years ago, I went on a sort of wilderness weekend, basically where you're sent away with two other people and it's up to you to survive in the woods. And you do like a number of different activities in the evening. But in these woods, out in the middle of nowhere in Devon, you just couldn't see anything. And we had to do these, you know, really scary exercises when you couldn't see your hand in front of you, let alone anything else. And you can't find your way out of a dark room on your own. Like, I need someone to flick the light switch on at the top of the stairs to give me a frame of reference. In the same way, doing these activities in the middle of the woods in a very dark winter night, we once had to follow like a piece of string up through the woods, and that was all you could feel, just trusting that you weren't going to trip over stuff. In the same way, you need someone to come and release you out of the dark place that you find yourself in. And that is exactly what we've got going on here throughout chapter 9, and we've only read the first sort of third of it. But someone being released from darkness in more ways than just physical. And chapter 9, by way of introduction, joins in with a sort of number of themes that John is sort of using throughout his gospel. So light, darkness, blindness, sight, these things keep coming up again and again and again. Why? Because John is in the process of painting a picture of who Jesus is and what he's here to do. He's telling us and revealing to us that that Jesus is the light of the world and the person that gives sight to the blind in more ways than one. And you may have noticed, but the chapter starts in quite a bizarre way. It starts actually with a theological question. And it starts in verse 1 to 2. The disciples ask Jesus about this blind man. Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And it was commonly known in the sort of ancient world that if you had a physical disability or there was something wrong with you, it must have been something that you had done or something that your parents had done. So the disciples are just sort of running on the cultural norm, as it were, of their day. But the question actually reveals their own blindness that is still in them. Jesus responds with, a little later, neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him. And we've got to be really careful when we read those verses, because you can be drawn into perhaps slightly unhelpful translations, making it sound like God caused this so that Jesus could come along, show us who he was, and the guy who was blind had to pay for that. That's not what is being said. Jesus is basically saying, guys, you are missing the point. The point is that I'm here and this person is about to receive their sight. The disciples who spent time walking and breathing next to the person who was the light of the world were still blind to who Jesus was and is. And maybe we can be too, still somewhat blind. The question about whether the man sinned or not comes up again and again, twice more throughout the chapter. He later bounces into his neighbours, who can't quite work out whether it's the same bloke. And then later on, he gets hauled up in front of the Pharisees. Basically, none of them understanding, all of them getting hung up on questions about theology and technicalities. And I think John is ultimately making the point that we all share a spiritual blindness from birth. Only Jesus can open our eyes to who he is and who we are in light of him. What does this mean for us? Because you and I might not be physically blind, but we might be still somewhat blind to the life that Jesus is really calling us to. That could look like, but is not limited to, unhelpful thought patterns, unhelpful behaviours or attitudes that just aren't Jesus-like. Maybe actually you're just blind to who Jesus is. Maybe you've hung around church for a bit, but if you're honest, you still don't know who he is because you haven't encountered him yet. Maybe you're blind to the needs of your local community, the things going around you, your family members who need you. Maybe you're blind to issues in your own discipleship. We've all got these blind spots. So how do we begin to undo our blindness? And how does Jesus go about freeing up the man in chapter 9? Well, firstly, in verse 1, we're told that Jesus himself notices the man. The man doesn't ask to be healed. Jesus takes the initiative. Jesus does something for us that we can't do for ourselves. And Jesus takes the initiative in quite a strange way. In verse 6, he spits into the mud and begins to rub the mud on the blind man's eyes. And, you know, reading from a 21st century perspective, that seems quite weird now, but it still even seemed quite weird then. But what Jesus is doing is actually pointing back to where things all went wrong, in a sense, on the grand scale. He's actually pointing back to the moment in creation where God formed Adam out of the dust. It's this wonderful picture being painted of the undoing of the sort of blindness that we're all under, as it were. That is being undone. But then Jesus asks the man to do something before the healing takes place. So in verse 7, he asks the man to go and wash in Siloam. And I think that's because when it comes to overcoming our blindness, as it were, Jesus looks for our cooperation. He'll never force himself upon us. It's up to us whether we want to be healed or not. And how open we are ultimately to the work of Jesus in our lives. When I was a youth worker back in Exeter, we used to go out on the streets. So another church leader and I went out on the streets to basically do like prophetic prayer for people. And we met this chap on Exeter Cathedral Green and approached him, and we're just sort of, our opening gambit, as it were, was, you know, we're slightly weird Christians going around praying for people. You know, is there anything we can pray for you for healing? And turns out he was actually, he'd come into Exeter to buy some new like BMX shoes or something like that. BMXing, if you don't know what that is just like crazy stunt cycling. I don't quite understand the sport. But he'd basically really ruined his knees to the point where his GP had said to him, it's like someone's let a hand grenade off next to your knees. They are so bad. So when we asked him how far he could move his legs, he could probably go, you know, about sort of that or that before things started to get painful. So really quite restricted movement. And so we just said, you know, can we pray for you? He said, yes. And I still, to this day, have to hide my expression when God does stuff, because I'm like, what? Something's happened? But it turns out God just turned up and completely healed these guys' legs. So afterwards, could like, he had full, he was as blown away as we were. Just had complete movement. And this sort of led on to about maybe a 20-minute conversation about who Jesus is, what he's here to do, what on earth has just happened. And this guy basically made a faith commitment there and then. And this, you know, I've got like maybe one or two stories like this. This doesn't happen all the time. But We basically ended by exchanging numbers, exchanging details about church, saying, you know, come back, you know, Sunday, we'd love to see you, love to get a coffee with you. But I heard nothing from him. It's one of the most disappointing things, because I was like, how is it that God can rock up in your life so powerfully, yet that just then goes nowhere? And I think the blind man in this story almost stands at the same junction. He gets this blip of God in his life, quite literally standing in front of him, and he can choose to go either way from there on in. And I think we get the same choices throughout our lives too. Jesus takes the initiative towards us, but he also looks for our cooperation in overcoming our ongoing blindness. And I guess this begins to underline how this guy is on a journey. So in chapter 9, he starts off knowing nothing about who Jesus is. Even after he's been healed, he's like, I don't know where he is. I think he's the man called Jesus. And at the end of the chapter, he then basically bumps into Jesus again and confesses his faith in him. So this is in verse 35, sorry. So he gets the grilling from the Pharisees, saying, you know, what has been going on. And then Jesus bumps into him, and Jesus says, do you believe in the Son of Man? The man asked who that is. Jesus says, he's right in front of you. You've seen him. Then the man says, Lord, I believe. The chapter ends with the man seeing physically and spiritually. He sees Jesus for who he really is, the Son of God, who's here to undo all of our self-inflicted wounds and the darkness that we sit in. Like I say, this guy goes on a journey. He starts off knowing nothing about who Jesus is and ends up seeing him as well as seeing him physically. So where do we go from here, us, tonight? Because we're all blind from birth, spiritually. We need Jesus to come and wake us up to who he is. And in some ways, that blindness then continues throughout our walk of faith. We need Jesus to keep unpeeling the sort of layers of us that we might see him and see ourselves for who we really are. Jesus takes the initiative towards us, wanting to heal us because he loves us and wants us to be free to live life fully with him. And being free is the beginning of that journey. I go back to some of the questions I asked you earlier. Have you ever encountered Jesus before? What I mean by that is experiencing his presence in a really powerful and profound way. Experiencing that you are loved so much just as you are, yet loved so much that Jesus refuses to leave you the way you are. Maybe you've been a follower of Jesus for a number of years, maybe your whole life so far, but maybe you're still blind to unhelpful attitudes or behaviors or thought patterns that are just robbing you of living life to the full in your walk. And finally, it strikes me that as you look across the Gospels in the New Testament, that the people who had their physical, mental, social, spiritual needs met are the ones who knew their situation. They knew they were a bit of a mess. They knew that they needed the man who was claiming to be the light of the world to do something for them that they couldn't do for themselves. And as we begin to ask ourselves these sorts of questions, where am I still blind? Where do I need Jesus to sort of take off the grave clothes, as it were? We need to do that with all humility, recognizing that we haven't got it all together or all worked out. Where are you still blind? As we sort of come into land, I'm going to pray and just ask God, just the Holy Spirit, just to be moving now, just maybe to reveal something that he wants to address. It might even be disconnected from things I've talked about. That's fine. I'll allow him that one. But just, I pray, just be open to what you feel maybe God is saying to you. Lord, pray, just as we wait on your Holy Spirit, would you come and move amongst us? We recognize our own blindness, the places in our lives, in our walks with you, where we've missed the point. Pray that you would just be moving now, showing us where we need your help.